Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Steve Lehman in for Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Marquise Munson on a Friday. We got a huge weekend in sports as the Titans and Texans. We'll get back to our final questions of the week for the Titans-Texans game coming up next segment, just a few minutes from now. Obviously, the Vols and the Memphis Tigers in probably the biggest basketball game I can remember in December in this state in quite some time. It's going to be awesome, maybe even going back to the 08 1-2 Calipari versus Bruce Pearl game out there at FedEx Forum. That was spectacular, but that's tomorrow. Preds with a huge game, 5:30 puck drop against the Dallas Stars tomorrow night. You got the Heisman Trophy, which feels like nobody's even paying attention to. Barton Simmons, although, because there is another story here, and that is that this is the last weekend you can recruit. You've got early signing period, which is now just the signing period, next Wednesday. Barton Simmons from 24/7 Sports joining us here. Barton, how are you, my friend?
Man, I'm good. How are we doing?
We're doing well. So before we get to Jeremy Pruitt, I just want to get your thoughts in general about all these new coaches. You got Mike Norvell at Florida State, all these new coaches across the country. We've now had 3 years of the early signing period. How difficult is it to take a new job today in college football and put together a class in all of 8 or 12 days?
It's brutal. And in a lot of cases, I mean, look at Boston College. They haven't even hired a coach yet. I assume there's going to be one hired this weekend, but that coach comes in and basically – misses the early signing period completely for the most part. So it's a tough deal to navigate. And I mean, I'll put it this way, you know, back before the early signing period, in a lot of cases, you know, people associate a coaching change with a dip in a recruiting class and a recruiting cycle that in which you're going to have some struggles. But the reality of the previous system was that really wasn't the case. If you had a new coach come in that was an aggressive, hardworking coach that was prioritized recruiting, he could come in with the new optimism, the promise of a new staff, a new day, and really piece together a really strong class by using those official visit dates in December and those official visit dates in January to flip a bunch of commits, get in the door on a bunch of new guys, and really generate a ton of momentum for recruiting towards February. But the new signing day, with it coming in December now, once that early signing day, that early signing period has passed, according to our numbers at 24/7 Sports, about 80% of the expected FBS signees are off the board. So if you don't get some serious work done before that early signing period, you inventory of prospects to choose from is at about 20% of the total number of FBS prospects. And so that's a really tough deal to navigate. So it really is important to make those moves quickly and decisively as an AD, and it's really important for those coaches to really hit the ground running when they take over and make the most of every day.
Barton, Jeremy Pruitt navigated some rocky waters early at Tennessee. Obviously, a lot of momentum with the way the Vols finished the season on the field. They got the big commitment from Omari Thomas out of Memphis just earlier this week. What do the Vols look like as we head towards Wednesday next week in terms of their class?
Yeah, it's the top 20 class right now. You know, it is, I think, they've done a really good job of evaluating, which has been, I think, a staple of the Jeremy Pruitt tenure early on. They've been able to get bigger. I think that's kind of consistent year over year is something that Tennessee is trying to do, is just get bigger everywhere. You know, they've gotten, this year they're getting bigger at linebacker. They got two 250-pound linebackers out of Memphis Whitehaven. They just got Omari Thomas, who you mentioned, who is another really talented line of scrimmage prospect that's got a lot of versatility. They got the quarterback, a guy named Harrison Bailey out of Georgia, who's one of the best in the country. And so I think that, you know, it's not a class that's sort of reverberating across the college football landscape with some sort of top five finish, but I think right now the way they're building it and in order to sort of take the incremental steps needed to be where they want to be, it's important to get the right guys, not miss on anybody, get high football character types. And then once you start putting together some really big seasons, then you can start swinging for the fences a little bit because you can be more selective and have some access to players that maybe you wouldn't otherwise. So I think right now they're in the process of building up to where they want to be. And, I've been very impressed with the way they evaluate. And I think this class is another example of that.
In general, we know who the elite recruiters are in the SEC, and we know Tennessee can be a top 15 recruiting team. But even if you finish 15th, that might make you 7th or 8th in the SEC in terms of talent. We just know how treacherous it is in this conference. Can you win consistently? Like Clemson has been odd because they are so extraordinarily talented and so much better than everybody in their conference, basically, and they're winning national titles and they're the best program in America, but they're not landing top three classes. Now I know they're like number one right now, but they've sort of been in that 8 to 12 to 15 range. Can you do that in the SEC if you're Tennessee? Can you land the 14th best class every year and win an SEC title consistently if you're not even in the top five in the SEC in recruiting?
I don't know if you can win an SEC. I mean, you can be really successful because I think it's important as long as you're hitting. Like, there are top 15 or top 20 type classes that are filled with guys that are kind of overhyped or misrepresented as elite players. And then there are classes that are really high quality, underrated classes in that sort of 15 and 20 range. And to be totally honest with you, I think Tennessee is more of the latter, a program that has strong classes, but the way they're evaluating, I think that they're typically getting, you know, they're not missing on many. And so I think you can have a really good class, but I do think it's a little bit of a different landscape in the SEC. First of all, with the Clemson stuff is while they haven't always had top five classes, the reason for that is partially due to the limited attrition that they have. Often they have smaller classes, and in those even top eight, top 10 classes they're bringing in, you know, there's usually a few five-star future first-round draft picks within those groups. And so they supplement those guys with the back end, guys that really fit your culture, guys that are high character, guys that, you know, that maybe the Alabamas or the Georgias might pass on, but the Clemson sees as guys that really fit their program. So that's if you're trying to compete for national titles, or trying to compete for SEC championships, then there is a certain level of elite NFL talent you have to have on your roster, and I think the rest of your roster has to be really high end overachievers that are going to build a strong culture within your program, and that's what Clemson's had in part. I think Tennessee was really excited about the way this true freshman class this year came in with strong football character. And so I think that if they continue to hit on that, regardless of what the rankings are, then I think they're going to be able to continue to ascend. Even if it's a little more deliberate than maybe some Vol fans are would hope for, it's they're going to be pointed in the right direction.
Well, it should be a huge weekend for recruiting, and then obviously a huge Wednesday next weekend. 24/7 Sports, your home for all that good stuff. Barton, always a pleasure, my man. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Barton Simmons there. Just wanted to dip the toe a little bit. I know it's a huge sports weekend, but it is something to keep an eye on, as Tennessee had a very big week on the recruiting trail this week. And signing day coming up on Wednesday, it's no longer the early signing period, Steve. It's just the signing period. 75-80% of prospects are going to sign on Wednesday. It is the future of college football. I know it's hard to get into the weeds on recruiting with a lot of people, but it is a critically important day for college football. And Tennessee, I think they're sitting at 19th or 18th in the rankings right now. If they can land a couple more players, Tennessee can be right into that top 15 territory. And only two teams have made the playoff without a top 15 average recruiting class, and that was Michigan State and Washington, and they lost by like a combined 75 to like 7 or something like
that.
It's
weird how when you get good players, you generally are pretty good.
Yeah, just because you get great players doesn't make you a great team, but no great teams have been assembled without great players.
Yep.
So there you have it. All right, when we return, the final questions about the Tennessee Titans, I got a bunch of them. I'm going to go rapid fire with you, Steve, and I want you to give me definitive answers, unequivocally true answers. Things that are going to happen.
Done.
The final questions on the Titans and Texans as we prepare for a first-place battle in the AFC South. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5 The Game is bringing you the road to Dallas, Nashville's best coverage of the Winter Classic. A little preview of the Dallas Stars tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. puck drop at Bridgestone Arena. A little different time, though, so make that note. Keep up with all you need to know about the Winter Classic as the Preds face the Stars in Dallas on New Year's Day. Special programming and live coverage from Dallas all month long. Hit up thegamenashville.com for full programming information. The road to Dallas is brought to you by Fifth Third Bank, Firestone, and Sudden Service Convenience Store. Steve Lehman in for Derek Mason, Braden Gall. Just a couple of segments left here on the show, and the Tennessee Titans, obviously a huge story. We've dipped the toe into the Preds. They've got a big game with Dallas. Tennessee-Memphis basketball is outstanding. Have not even mentioned the Heisman Trophy on a Friday doing radio. I cannot remember the last time that we did not even discuss the Heisman Trophy on that Friday going into the event. It's remarkable how quiet the conversation is around the Heisman Trophy. And now we're actually into the conversation, so I didn't mean to do this. But, you know, Joe Burrow is such so worthy and so deserving, and it's such a great story that it's like, you know, people are just like, okay, cool.
Yeah, to me, the actual award ceremony has been diminished over the last few years. I don't know why, really, but it's been a little less appointment television. But I think you're right. This year, to me, the biggest question is, does Chase Young, a defensive player, finish second, basically? You know, I think it's possible. Where does he finish? But I think you're right. Joe Burrow is going to be the one giving the speech and holding the trophy at the end of the night.
I love the Tom Rinaldi-style background stories for the kids too. I think that's a great night because a lot of times these college kids, they don't get any love because they work behind these, you know, dictator of coaches that keep them all behind lock and key. And you're not allowed to talk to them and get to know them. And college coaches don't really let their players do much media. And, you know, Tua Tagovailoa is doing a halftime interview during the Auburn Alabama game. And I'm like, oh, this guy's amazing. Like, we knew he's a good talker, but this interview is fantastic. Like, he's going to be a great CEO or representation for an NFL franchise one day. So it's going to be great to get to know those kids a little bit, but you're right, not a lot of hype for that. All right, so the Tennessee Titans against the Texans, of course, coming up on Sunday. I've got some quick, rapid-fire final questions that we need to answer about this game, this situation, this matchup, excuse me.
Okay.
Will any concern at all that Derrick Henry doesn't play?
No.
0% chance he doesn't play.
I see no way that he doesn't go out there and play. Unless, like, he blows the hamstring in pregame warmups or something like that. But I think they're going to manage him this week. He may not even practice at all this week, but I think he's going to be ready to go on Sunday and go out there. Even if he's not 100%, I think he's going to give it a go and probably be pretty effective.
My next question is, what is his percentage of effectiveness? Does he get his, fifth consecutive 100-yard? That's what he's shooting for, fifth consecutive 100-yard game?
I don't know if he'll get to 100 yards necessarily, but I think he'll be effective. And it's because of the reason I used earlier. There was a time not that long ago, beginning of last season, certainly the first couple years of his career, where Derrick Henry at 6'3", 248, thought he was a 5'8", 180-pound back and wanted to always get to the outside and bust a huge home run play and show his breakaway speed. He still has that. But he has embraced over the last 12 months his size and physicality. And I think we saw in Oakland last week, it wasn't explosive runs to the outside. It was grinding away and getting 4 and 5, and then later in the game, 7 and 8 yards a pop. I think even with a bad hamstring, he can be that guy against the Texans.
I tend to agree, and I think it all goes back to the day he got benched for David Fuellen against the Patriots. He was very hard on himself. I think he called himself trash or garbage or something like that in the post game, and he just was like, I'm terrible. I got to be better. He looked himself in the mirror, and he changed his game. And I give a guy a lot of credit for that. I think people deserve credit for that sort of self-evaluation. Now, he's very hard on himself, which sometimes can be a negative, but that's just something you have to work through. Some of us all have that from time to time where we're too hard on ourselves. But he clearly changed after that moment and has been a very different player ever since. I agree with your style, or your analysis of his style of running. And I do think if he stays, the other thing about this is he doesn't need 23 carries for them to win this game and for him to have a greater impact on the game. He may only need 13 carries. If he's still picking up 4 or 5 yards, he averages 4.7 for his career. So let's just say he sticks with his career average at 4.7 for 12 or 15 carries. To me, what that does is it creates the threat for the play action. And that's it.
Sure.
As long as he is still the threat in the backfield and they are worried about him and concerned about him, because make no mistake, the game plan against the Titans starts with Derrick Henry now. If you're a defensive coordinator, you're Romeo Crennel, you are starting with how do we stop Derrick Henry. And from off of that, you then work the play action pass in if you're the Titans. And that's where Ryan Tannehill's been so great. So he doesn't need 26 carries for 160 yards to win this game for them. All he needs is to be the threat of the 50-yard run or the 40-yard run. And as long as he's in there and there's a threat of that play, then the play action to A.J. Brown, the play action to Anthony Firkser, who I think has been quietly very productive, the play action to Corey Davis, the play action then becomes a bigger factor in the offense.
I agree with your large point there. The one thing I'm going to disagree with is I think he needs 20 carries in this game for them to be able to run the offense they want to run.
Okay.
You know, if he only gets 12 or 13 carries, it probably means the Titans were behind and they're having to throw more than they want to. That's not a position they want to be in.
But what if it's just about the injury, though, and Deion Lewis just happens to get a few more carries?
Well, if he gets 12 and Deion Lewis gets 9 or something like that, maybe, and tell me how effective Deion Lewis is going to be in that case, because there have been times this year when he's been okay spelling him, and there's been times when he's been really bad in that role. I don't know the answer to that, but I think the game plan for the Titans has to be to get 20 to 25 carries in the game to have the offense be what you want it to be, and given what we've seen, you're hoping the majority of those are going to Derrick Henry.
No, I 100% agree with all of that. I just wonder, and I don't envy Arthur Smith and Mike Vrabel in this situation, where they do have to think larger than just this game. I know you can't normally do that.
See, I don't think you can, though. I know what you're saying.
But what happens if you just
don't
want to
risk him?
And he's gone.
Well, what happens if you don't use him now and you lose this weekend? To me, you got to win this game on Sunday, and then you figure out what's next. Because if you keep the bullet in the holster, so to speak, and only run him 10 times or 11 times and try to get whatever you can in a limited piece, but then you lose the game, you haven't done yourself any service.
Yeah,
I think you have to go all in, and I mean, heaven forbid, you don't want him to get hurt, but I think you have to go all in with whatever pieces you have this weekend to win this game right now.
Zero
and
thought.
On Monday, you'll come back and say, okay, now where are we?
So zero thought to protecting him at all. I'm not saying, again, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is the balance between the two. I'm not saying save the bullets and not use him. and I'm not saying go all out and just give him 32 carries. I'm saying as the game progresses, there may be a moment where you know you need to give him the ball more because you feel like maybe it's slipping away and, okay, we need to rely on you, Derek. We're going to have to push you here, and that might cause injury, but we're going to go with it versus, all right, we're in the lead. We're up three. We're up seven. It's a tie game, whatever. The offense is moving well. Instead of giving you six straight carries, we're giving you four straight carries and then mixing in Deion Lewis for one or two. I'm curious where the middle ground is on balancing the risk of injury versus going all out to win this game. Because I agree with you, you have to win the game no matter what. And if that means losing Derrick Henry to an injury, I still think you have to take the win in that case. But is there a way to find that middle ground somewhere where you're still giving yourself a really great chance to win with somehow limiting the risk of injury, however that looks or whatever, to Arthur Smith?
I don't think it's in any of the scenarios you just painted, which are all close game scenarios, basically. I think you have to just play to win the game in those cases. I think where the smart play comes in with Derrick Henry is, say you somehow have a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter. Maybe,
which is where he's at his best.
That would be the time when traditionally you hand the ball to Derrick Henry on every play.
Right, right.
This may be the week where maybe you hand the ball to Deion Lewis a little bit more there and say, okay, he's done the job to get us to this point. Now we back off and we don't get him carries 21 through 27. We keep him here and we trust our defense and the rest of our team can milk this away.
And maybe the answer, as I'm kind of thinking through this, from like, hey, if I'm Arthur Smith, how do I do that? Right, protect him and also use him. Like, it's a really tough thing to do. I think part of that is play action on first down.
Yeah,
where you're not using him up on first and second down and third down. Like, he's in the game, he's a threat, but you're going to use him as a decoy, and then that way maybe he's got 15 or 16 carries instead of 24 carries. You haven't risked his injury as much, but you're still using him to create offense. And yep. I think that I think is the perfect scenario. But again, eventually you're going to have to hand him the ball on first down, because eventually Cornell's going to be sitting up there in the box as a Texans defensive coordinator saying, well, they're going to play action on first down every time. We're not going to – the linebackers stay back. You know what I mean? Like, eventually they'll catch up to it, but maybe you start that way and that saves them some juice. I don't know. I'm trying to come up with the balancing act here.
By the way, I don't think it has been talked about enough, the job that Arthur Smith has done over the last few weeks. At the beginning of the season, when they were struggling, everybody wanted to criticize the new offensive coordinator and the offense and what was going on. And look, Arthur Smith deserved the criticism early on. He wasn't very good. Absolutely.
Yep.
But when you start talking about this offense that has been historically good, not just better for the Titans, but historically good in a league sense over the last month and change, Arthur Smith deserves a lot of credit for his play calls, his use of guys, setting Ryan Tannehill up for success. He has been very, very good here in this stretch.
The Texans are terrible at getting pressure at the quarterback, and they're the worst team in the NFL at getting off the field on third down. They're 32nd in the NFL in third down conversion on defense. I am not as worried about the Titans offense. I think they're going to be productive. To your point, Arthur Smith does deserve a lot of credit. The offensive line has come along and been better in the last month and a half. Derek and Ryan get all the credit. The quarterback and the running back get all the credit because they're the flashy guys that touch the football. AJ Brown has gotten better.
Okay.
And Arthur Smith, Vrabel, everybody has gotten better together, and the whole entire thing has developed. That part of it I'm not as worried about. The part I'm worried about, I'll explain what I'm worried about when we come back.
Okay.
Because it's the other side of the ball. And we'll explain. And who's on the field on Sunday? We'll do that. Steve Lehman in for Derek Mason. Braden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
His palms are sweaty, knees weak, arms are heavy. There's vomit on his sweater already. Mom's spaghetti, he's nervous. But on the surface, he looks calm and ready to drop bombs. But he keeps on forgetting what he wrote down. The whole crowd goes so loud, he opens his mouth, but the words won't come out. He's choking how? Everybody's choking now.
And then everybody's trying to go coast to coast like buttered toast, and not many can do it except Yosses.
The clock's run out, time's up, arms are loud. Snap back to reality.
Marquise Munson with the walk-off.
Wow. Happy Friday, everybody.
I was going to talk Titans. I don't even want to do that now. Munson, just quit. Quit the entire industry and retire. That is as good a job as you will ever do your entire career. Spectacular work. Can we play it again? Because there's vomit on my sweater already. Let me hear that again. That is Terry Crisp as Slim Shady.
His palms are sweaty, knees weak, arms are heavy. There's vomit on his sweater already. Mom's spaghetti, he's nervous.
But on the surface, he looks calm and ready to drop bombs. But he keeps on forgetting what he wrote down. The whole crowd goes so loud, he opens his mouth, but the words won't come out. He's choking how? Everybody's choking now.
And then everybody's trying to go coast to coast like buttered toast, and not many can do it except Yosses.
The clock's run out, time's up, over, loud. Snap back to reality, oh, there goes gravity.
Marquise Munson, I just would like to openly profess my love for you. That made my I needed that so badly in my life right now. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Marquise, for doing that.
I was a little choppy, but you know, now, I had to get it done in like 15 minutes. So I only had 15 minutes.
How many songs did you go through to get to that song to where it would fit?
So basically, what I did here is producers 101, and we got an intern here, so now he can kind of learn something. So I downloaded the clean version of Lose Yourself and then downloaded the instrumental version. So it's two versions. So I used the instrumental version for Terry's part, and then I just kind of,
oh, that's really serious.
Yeah, I put a silence, like a dead air in the middle of where I wanted his part at.
So you just, but you heard my question is you heard his flow and you just, that's the song that came to mind that matched his rhythm and beat.
He dropped bombs.
You just knew that already. That's the one you needed to go to.
Yeah,
God, that's good hip-hop knowledge.
Because after Yost, he starts rhyming joke and all this other stuff, so that's, you know, yeah.
The idea that you could pull that so quickly and have it match with his cadence and tempo out of, like, the hundreds of millions of hip-hop songs that are out there, that is incredible, Marquise.
It's great. It's great.
That is spectacular.
That was the best out-of-break bump music.
In the history of sports radio.
In the history of radio, yes.
I appreciate that, fellas.
I don't even know what to say.
Derek Henry.
You know how hard it is to make me go silent?
Yeah,
everybody knows. It's possible. Oh, my gosh. You're listening to Morning Drive, I think, live from the Wholesaling Studio powered by RumbleOn.com.
We're getting closer to the afternoon.
Oh, my God. That was spectacular. At 1025 underscore MD, we got a few last-minute entrants here. We're giving away a $100 gift card to a Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. That's coming up next segment. We'll do that. And, of course, a couple of late entrants here. David on Twitter says, almost missed my flight home on Christmas from New York to Nashville because the lady in front of me tried for 30 minutes to check a trash bag full of dead fish. LaGuardia is a special place. That's right.
Yes, it is.
Somebody tried to check a trash bag full of dead fish.
Wow. The key to the contest, though, is he just said almost missed his flight, right?
You can't get anything past Steve Lehman, man.
Yeah.
And if you made the flight...
I mean, the dead fish is miserable, but if you make the flight, you're home on time.
And it's not really a terrible travel story, except for the fact that you stood behind a bag of dead fish for 30 minutes, which is awful. Yeah. And also, that's just like par for the course at LaGuardia. Like, LaGuardia is such a mess right now, although it'll be great once it's finished after 14 years of construction. Uh-huh. It's just taken a while to do that. Elliot on Twitter says, I was trying to get back home to Chicago for Thanksgiving. It's not a Christmas story, but because of the weather, I got rerouted to Kansas. I met a curtain ring salesman named Del Griffin. Our personalities clashed, and the three-day fiasco back to Chicago was hell. Rental car lady had me upset. That's also very bizarre and not Christmas. But a difficult travel experience. I wonder what old Del Griffin's doing.
I kind of want to hear more, actually.
I want to know what Del Griffin's doing.
I would like to know more about this.
Are there traveling curtain ring salesmen still? Like, that doesn't seem like a thing.
And why are you unable to get away from this person?
Right. Were you traveling? Why were you with Del for 3 days? Again, why don't you just go to Amazon.com and order some? I don't know.
Wow.
Target, you can get curtain rings pretty much anywhere. I don't know why there's a salesman out there selling curtain rings. No disrespect to the profession. I'm sure it's a noble cause.
Go get blinds.
Yes, at Decorating Den Interiors.
Just avoid. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so the Tennessee Titans offense, not the concern necessarily, but we are worried about Derrick Henry's health and managing that, and we've talked a lot about it. The other side of the ball, I think, is the area of concern. Deshaun Watson, a special, special player. They have special talent at wide receiver if Will Fuller is fully healthy, although you never really know on any given pass route when he's fully healthy or not. They've got Kenny Stills, who's a burner who can go deep. The Titans look like LaShawn Sims is clearly going to be back. Kenny Vaccaro has been practicing but has to clear concussion protocol. I assume Adoree Jackson's not going to play, and Malcolm Butler is out. What does this secondary do to stop Deshaun Watson in the passing attack? That, to me, what Dean Pease decides to do with that group and how he masks the inefficiencies, I think, is going to be the deciding factor in the game.
I agree. I think that early in the year, I thought the Titans secondary was the strength of the football team on both sides, frankly. I thought they had so many bodies and talented bodies, guys who can make plays back there. I think they won football games for this team. But now the bodies are being tested. As you said, Malcolm Butler's out for the year. I do think they're going to have LeSean Sims back this week, which is big. But Noah Dorey Jackson hurts, especially with those burners, the guys who can stretch the field. Right. He's the one guy on that unit that I think can run stride for stride with a Will Fuller or a Kenny Stills. So now you're going to ask Logan Ryan to line up against DeAndre Hopkins and stop him for the entire day. And you're going to ask LeSean Sims and Ty Smith and Tremaine Brock to try to guard those other guys. And
you've already gotten your money's worth out of Ty Smith, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, for sure.
Like, he's given you all that you probably expected out of him.
But the plays he's given you are what he does. He's a physical cornerback who is as good as anybody I've seen, maybe with the exception of Peanut Tillman, at punching the ball out and making plays that way.
Good special teams guy.
Ty Smith's going to do that still. But what I'm not sure he can do is line up, being a big physical cornerback, and run downfield stride for stride with a burner. And that's what you're going to ask him to do this week. And frankly, against the Saints, and then again against the Texans in week 17. I think the health of this secondary is absolutely the biggest concern.
And that leads to, how do you pressure the quarterback? If you can get pressure with Casey, Landry, and Simmons up front, and you don't need to bring extra bodies, that will help your defense. You can run zone blitzes. You can drop extra guys into coverage. That helps mask those inefficiencies. So I think Harold Landry becomes a critical piece of this defense for the Titans. He's turned into an every series, every game impact player. I think Jayon Brown's going to have a huge role because Duke Johnson out of the backfield is a dangerous weapon as a receiver in space. Their tight ends are not explosive, but very active in the offense, especially in the red zone. I think that's where Jayon Brown is a guy that is designated sort of tight end, running back, stop guy. He's great in space. I think that's going to be a factor. And then, of course, spying Deshaun Watson, which when the play breaks down, somebody better be accounting for number four. And so there's a lot of pressure on this defense, and I think Dean Pease is going to have to be really masterful with how he deploys his instruments this weekend.
Can he devise some coverages that maybe can confuse the young quarterback? I think that's as important as maybe devising blitzes that get to the quarterback.
Can you confuse Deshaun Watson?
It's a great question. It's a great question. I don't know, but I'm curious what he does in that realm. And the other thing is, I think being able to play zone is going to be important in this game. But here's the thing. To do that effectively on passing downs, you have to win the early downs. And we talked very minimally about the Texans running game early. I think the Titans' defensive line and front seven have to be great against the run in this game. Yeah. Those running backs cannot gain yards because you can't allow the Texans to be in third and short. They need to be in third and 10 and third and 8 and things like that, because then I think you can drop a lot of guys and you can have different people back there to shadow those wide receivers.
You can give up the 7-yard run to Deshaun Watson on third and 10.
Yep.
It works fine. And I do think it's interesting. The Texans actually run the ball more. They have a greater yards per game and yards per carry than the Tennessee Titans do. I don't think many people would realize that. But Carlos Hyde's almost at 1,000 yards. Duke Johnson sort of is a little bit of a dual threat out of the backfield. Maybe a better version, a more jittery version of Deion Lewis. But really, it's sort of non-traditional, right? It's Deshaun Watson picking up 30, 40 yards a game in breakdown situations or even some design runs. Hell, he caught a touchdown pass this year on an option from DeAndre Hopkins. So I think it's how they do that that's going to be fascinating to watch. And I agree, you got to stop that part of the game. It's all got to be set up for third and 8. If you can get them to third and 8, you can get off the field and you can win that down. I think that's critical. Just like for the Titans, you want to be in 3rd and 4. And if you're in 3rd and 4, the Texans defense has shown us all season they are 32nd in the NFL in third down conversion defense. They do not get off the field. Mm-hmm. And if you can keep them ahead of the sticks at 3rd and 3 on offense, 3rd and 4, 3rd and 5, Tannehill's been great in play action. A.J. Brown and those tight ends have been great in the short passing game. The crossing route's a staple of the Arthur Smith offense now. I think there's a lot to like about this on the offensive side. It's the defense that concerns me. And last but not least, we have not talked about this today, but Derek and I spent all week talking about it. Eventually, not making field goals is going to cost you.
Yeah.
It's going to cost you. You cannot average 47% on your field goal kicker.
No.
And expect to win championships.
No.
So if that kick at the end of the Oakland first half was at the end of the second half, is the game different? Who knows? that will eventually cost you. So we're just going to sort of say, let's hope that works out, because there's nothing they can do about that one. He's either going to make the kick or not. There's not really a – we can't really analyze that, right?
Yeah, you just have to hope he continues to get stronger and stronger the more he is removed from the injury. And then with the strength comes back the confidence and the consistency that Ryan Succop has frankly been his entire career.
Hopefully. It's really funny, too, if Cairo Santos had just gone 3-for-4, because the Texans are at about 76% from field goal territory. If Cairo Santos goes 3-for-4 in that Buffalo game instead of 0-for-4, which is 75%, which is about the league average, they win that game.
Yeah.
And they're a game up on the Texans right now. So it's going to cost you at some point. I don't think you can continue to live where they are in special teams. We've talked about that enough this week, though. So, all right, when we come back, big finish, and we'll give away that $100 gift card to A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa right here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Now it's time for a big finish on Morning Drive.
Daily Rewind coming up just a second, but our $100 gift card to A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa for the worst travel experience on Christmas. Not Guns, who crashed his mom's car. Not the guy
Although that was close.
That was a good
one. That was a good one.
Not Kaylee, who had to fly from Australia to Syracuse and missed his flight and was 13 hours later. Not the one who moved back to North Carolina to their parents' house to find out that their parents were breaking up. Not that one. But who wins it? Landon Stover wins it. Stuck at a regional airport in Arkansas for 18 hours with wife and three kids. Three kids under four. Had to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner out of a vending machine on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, that sounds
brutal. Awful. Congratulations, Landon Stover. We're going to slide up into those DMs and give you a nice gift card so you can go get yourself $100 worth of pampering.
Congratulations. You had one of the worst days imaginable.
Absolutely. Now, let's rewind it back. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome to the show. Friday edition, a huge football Friday. There's times in sports, Steve, where you watch a game and you see a team perform and you don't really think there's something wrong. Like, I watch a team and I don't really think something's broken or this was an utter failure or this part of the game was trash, like we've seen sometimes with this team where, like, the power play wasn't working or the penalty kill was terrible or the goaltending was terrible or the defense was bad or something else was really good. It just felt like Buffalo, like the Preds played a pretty decent game and Buffalo played a pretty decent game and they were just better. And I can't tell if that's something you should take a positive and feel good about that because you played against a pretty good team, second place in their division, in their building. They're 10-3-3 at home. Or you should be worried that you played a good game and just weren't good enough. I don't know which one it is.
What's the big picture thing that I'm supposed to take away from this 4-3 loss here?
In December.
And I think particularly from the game last night, I don't know if there is one because that just happens sometimes. You play a good team on the road, you can play well, they might play a little bit better, or they get a bounce and you lose. There have been a few too many nights that are like last night, where it wasn't that they played awful, but they didn't play well enough to get a point, or didn't play well enough to win.
Tampa, Vegas, just recently.
Lost in some shootouts in there, and that's the thing. So, I mean, they've played really well here over the last 6 or 7 games, for the most part, in terms of getting points. But that's how bad they were for that stretch, where even where they're now almost getting a point every time out, they're still in 11th place. And that's the thing I think you need to worry about.
Josh Ward from WNML.
Since he's playing a bunch of good teams, good college basketball programs from Florida State and VCU, Washington earlier in the season to Cincinnati coming up, Wisconsin is a really good program from the Big Ten. None of those games come close to comparing to the excitement level Tennessee fans have for this Memphis game. And we're not going to see a 100% Memphis because of injury issues and then James Wiseman's app. But the Penny Hardaway, Rick Barnes stuff, coaches don't always have to like each other. That it's okay if they don't, and that would appear to be the case here. But fans on both sides have great rooting interest, and that's great for college basketball, especially at this time of year. I can't wait to see what happens at Thompson Bowling this weekend.
There's not as much pull there for Tennessee. They don't need it as much as maybe Memphis does, although Memphis is quickly, from a brand standpoint and the way Penny's recruiting, he's quickly moving past a lot of programs in this area. But the state, it's good for the state. I'm not sure Rick Barnes sees necessarily all the value of having to play that non-conference game every year. Yeah. He's got a great schedule in his conference to get a good resume. Penny kind of needs it a little bit more. Maybe there's some bad blood and he doesn't want to schedule him. I mean, who knows? But I think, you know, if people could put everything aside, put ego aside, it would be a great matchup. That if we could schedule it 1 year in Memphis, 1 year in Tennessee, in Knoxville, and 1 year in Nashville, and rotate it
every
3 years, it would be awesome.
We need this game as a state. And here, maybe you don't like Penny. Maybe you don't think you need the game if you're Tennessee, and you're probably right. But that's the great thing about basketball. This isn't college football where you're worried about playing that one marquee game and what happens if I lose it? Can I ever get back on track? You play one game like that, it's great for everybody involved. And if you lose it, it's December. There's a lot of basketball to be played to make up ground from that.
For our next guest, Teron Davenport.
Going 30 to 24, and I think when you look at this offense, it continues to roll. I think Tannehill, which last week I predicted a 300-yard passing game, I don't think he has it this week, but I think he's in the high 250s, 270s, somewhere around there. And I think this is a big week for Jonnu Smith. So watch that. And like I said, 30 to 24, I think this Titans team wins. They take control of the AFC South division, and they have their own destiny in their hands.
So there was a couple in Kansas who had a Christmas license. Steve's laughing because he knows where this is going. So they had Christmas decorations on their house, but it wasn't your ordinary Christmas decorations. No. It wasn't Frosty the Snowman. No. It wasn't Santa Claus.
No.
Anything. It was the male and female body parts that were inflated on top of this people's houses, lit up, I might add, with all lights and everything. And yeah,
so
that's
like
your
a
Christmas decoration.
So it's like the male parts and then like a couple of headlights on the roof of the house? Is that what we're saying?
We're not talking headlights here. We're talking male parts and
full
and,
Monty.
Yeah. Okay.
How do you do that in lights? Terry Crisp joining us here.
It was just one thing. Obviously, you would correct it. That's a coach's job and the player's job to do that. It's sort of like domino effect. You start with one bad pass and you start with everybody trying to overdo it. Everybody's going to be a lone ranger and win the game by themselves. And then everybody's trying to go one coast to coast like buttered toast. And not many can do it except Yost is one of the best at doing that. So it's not just one thing. It's a cumulative bunch of things. So you start back at the basics. And the basics is let's get out of our end free and clear and fast.
I'm stealing coast to coast like buttered toast. Well, I'm using that on the air.
But you got to go the third line, though, because I don't think that you rhymed a third time, right? It's coast to coast like buttered toast, and no one can do it except for Yost. Like, it's pretty good stuff. You got a hip-hop career,
that would
Crispy.
Be my entire segment at that point, so I may not be able to go that far, but
I'm glad I brought a little bit of humor into your morning.
Oh, Crispy always brings a little humor into your morning. Steve Lehman always brings a lot of insight, intelligence, data, and analysis, and takes, and finely crafted broadcasting delivery. I love it, Steve. I always love working with you, man.
Yeah, dude. This was fun. Thank you.
Thank you so much for hanging out.
Munson, thank you back there.
Munson, epic performance by you today. Always epic by you, but even more so today. For Steve, my name is Braden. His name is Marquise Munson. And just normally, Derek would say something here, but I think I'm just going to let Slim Crispy do the work here. Have a good weekend, everybody.
He's choking how? Everybody's choking now.
And then everybody's trying to go coast to coast like buttered toast, and not many can do it except Yost's.
The clock's run out. Time's up. Over. Plow.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton on with the podcast.